Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and we are here tonight. Should have a full crew on hand with Dr. Kate and Dwayne Moore, who I believe has a live mic, and we are waiting for our other co-host, Red Beckman. And Dwayne, how about opening us up with a prayer? And I would assume that you have our guest online with you.
I sure do, and they're ready to go. So, I'd be happy to open us up.
And Dwayne, just after the prayer, just go right ahead and make the introductions.
All right, that sounds good to me. First, let's introduce the Father. Father, thank you for coming into our hearts and our lives again. We appreciate every single thing you do for us. Oh, my King, there's none greater. There's none greater. What an awesome, wonderful, wonderful God you are. Father, we thank you this evening for another opportunity to bring some wonderful people together. Those that have the information, those who yearn for it. Father, the things that you have are nothing but truth. And as my screen on the computer says right now, with my screensaver, thy word is truth. Father, nothing but you can produce such truth. Nothing could be such perfection in this world. Father, I know I'm bubbling over here today with all the great things that are taking place, so I'm not real organized with my prayer here tonight, Father, but it's just so much excitement, so many things wonderful happening in the world. Things look gloomy to others, but they look so exciting to folks like myself and Terry and Red and the rest of us, Jack and Marty. There's so many great things happening. We want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts, Father, that you've given us one more opportunity to come together with you to reveal more truth in this light, in this awakening world, that we might all find you, glorify you, and come together in the fullest richness of your glory and your majesty. In the name of your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach, a great hallelujah toward you, Father. Hallelujah and amen. Well, in introducing our great almighty sovereign, I've got a little bit smaller sovereigns hailing from the state of Maine, who used to be in New Mexico. Great friends of mine, they've been on my show several times over the years. Jack and Margie Flynn, they're great guys. They absolutely have a command of the Constitution. It is absolutely embarrassing for me to stand next to them. I can't even get next to them in their shadows with the knowledge that they have. They're up near, I think it's Bingham, Maine. Am I correct, Jack, Margie?
Yes, you are. That's
Bingham?
Correct.
Great to have you with us, and thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate you being here. Terry, it's all yours, and Jack and Margie, thank you so much for being with us. Can you tell a little bit about yourself, Jack, Margie?
Okay, Margie is going to join you. Oh, here she is. She was running a little late. Well, thank you for that introduction. That was very nice of you. And, of course, you're with us, Dwayne, because you're one of the few people out there who really is serious and who does instead of talks. So you're not in our shadow. You're right with us. We are Jack and Margie Flynn. We founded an organization called Citizens of the American Constitution. Margie and I have been doing constitutional work for a long, long time. I've been doing it for almost, over 58 years. Margie's been doing it for over 50 years. And we not only teach the Constitution and shuns, meaning the state constitutions, as well, but the most important aspect of the Constitution is to make it live. Isn't that why Jesus came, to make the law live? Well, we're trying to make the Constitution live, and the way you make the Constitution live is by teaching people how to apply it, so that when they apply it properly with the correct constitutional positions and the correct due process of law, then they can effectuate pretty much whatever they want anywhere they want, as long as they're serious and not going through the motions. Unfortunately, folks, too many people in the Patriot Movement talk a lot. They go through motions, but they don't take a lot of action. And the action they do take is really not effective action. And for the most part, and I think most of you would agree, the vast majority of the action that's taken by people in the patriotic groups is not based upon the Constitution. It's based upon other positions that I think people are finally beginning to realize have been fronts for a long, long time. And if you take a look at people in history such as Lenin, not one of my favorite personalities, he made a statement many, many years ago to the effect that there will be opposition to their policies and programs, and the best way to control that opposition is to create it. Then not only the opposition can be controlled, but their policies and programs will work exactly as they want them to work. And I think this, unfortunately, has happened in America. A lot of people dropped the Constitution right after FDR and started looking at other processes that have really hurt the American people in the long run. So we're committed to the Constitution. We're committed to teaching the Constitution to people who are really serious about it. And as far as our background is concerned, I can give you an example of what happened during our active period in New Mexico. We were there for about 15 years, but active for only 10, a little over 10 years. And in that 10 years in New Mexico, we set up very small groups. None of our groups were large. They were all small because they were composed of committed citizens. We set them up in Santa Fe, Las Vegas, New Mexico, and Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we and our people, over a 10-and-a-half-year period or so, won hundreds of cases in New Mexico state courts without one loss. All victories, and all based upon the constitutions. We also removed numerous, numerous politicians, judges, and police from office. As a matter of fact, we got a call from a fellow who was the president of the John Birch Society. What was his name? Oh, John McManus. John McManus called us and said he wanted to learn about us and learn about our methods and would like us to send him a little dossier on what we've done. And we asked John why, because we knew that the John Birch Society has zero intention of publishing anything regarding us and has zero intention of publishing anything regarding successful constitutional solutions by anyone. Okay? Unfortunately, folks, the Birch Organization fits into the program described by Lenin many, many years ago. And most of the organizations that are theoretically on the Patriot bandwagon fit that description. The question is, if there are that many organizations out there representing the Constitution and representing true patriotism, why is this country getting worse instead of getting better? But getting back to John McManus, we said, okay, we know you're not going to publish anything, but we'll send you a little dossier. And when we put it together, we realized that we had done more than we ever expected. And in the removal of politicians and police and judges from office, we and our people were effective in removing over 4 dozen politicians from office during that 10-year period and had won many, many battles against gigantic corporations, not only in Mexico but elsewhere, including Los Alamos National Laboratories and PNM, one of the largest corporations in New Mexico. Now, the people that work with us were dedicated constitutionalists. And if dedicated constitutionalists, or if people do not like that name, followers of the supreme law. If followers of the supreme law come together in unison for common purpose, they can do almost anything. And I'll give the mic to Margie. She might want to make a few comments.
Mm-hmm. Notice how he said might want to make a few comments. All of you married fellas out there probably know that your wives like to put their two cents in every now and then. And I'm happy to say that in our marriage, our relationship, it's pretty equal. We are, I would say, pretty much mutually respectful of each other, which is not to say that we don't disagree on things from time to time. But, of course, it always works out because Jack knows that I'm usually right, so he just admits it and it's a done deal. I'm hearing a weak protest from the peanut gallery. Anyway, just putting a little levity in because it seems when we speak with folks on calls and on the radio, a lot of the subject matter that comes up during the conversation and discussion is very serious. And I'm not attempting in any way, shape, or form to minimize the seriousness of the straits in which our beloved nation is currently drifting and possibly drowning. But at the same time, I recognize that if we don't get some perspective and if we don't learn to laugh at ourselves from time to time, we are incapable of doing anything that has much merit or worth to it. Jack mentioned earlier that he and I have been doing this kind of work for a very long time, which, you know, immediately gives away the fact that we are, as my son would say, geezers, or at least approaching the slippery slope of geezerhood. And we are, you know, parents and we're grandparents and love that aspect of our lives. But truthfully, we have very serious and grave concerns about where this country is heading and what kind of life our children and our grandchildren are going to be living in just a short time. Because of those concerns, we have spent the last decade or more trying to reach out to our fellow citizens in this country to awaken them, to stimulate them, to hopefully educate them and share with them in any way that we can do so productively our views on how things might be and what we see as solutions to reclaiming, reestablishing, and rededicating America to being a constitutional republic, which, as those of you who know what a republic actually means may know, is a nation of written laws. And our Constitution is our written law, and that is the rule of law, which our politicians love to give lip service to, but to which they rarely, if ever, uphold. And it seems to me that they have gone out of their way to deride it and trivialize it and make it seem like it's some antiquated, dusty old piece of parchment which really should not have any sway over modern-day life. And nothing could be further from the truth. Our Constitution, in our view, was divinely inspired. And we see this in a very special way because America uniquely presented the people with a chance to be self-governing. That's something that is practically unheard of on this planet. And the thing that is so tragic in our eyes is the fact that the American people did not grasp what it means to be self-governing because they have not been minding the store. I am very wont to say when we present seminars to people that self-governance is not a spectator sport. You must participate. You cannot sit home and watch the television and say that you are paying attention. First of all, the so-called news media doesn't really present any news. And what it does present is propaganda and highly spun, selective broadcasting, if you will. So the American populace has a very big deficit when it comes to understanding what's going on. And even people in the patriot movement, or what we would euphemistically call a patriot movement, because I don't really think there is one anymore, those people seem to be so overloaded with facts and emails and videos and causes and what have you, that many of them are confused about what really is important. in our view. There is nothing more important, first of all, than our faith in our Heavenly Father and our strength and commitment to doing the righteous, just, and honorable thing. In order to do that, you need to live in a country that respects people who love God, respects people who want to promote the truth, respects people who love justice and really earnestly seek it, not only for themselves but for others. I don't think we see enough of that in the American public these days. We have become a nation of rabid consumers, self-centered, unwilling to really look at the truth because it's inconvenient, to quote Al Gore. And not that I like the man, but I think his expression was a good one, an inconvenient truth, even though his book was a bunch of baloney just to push the carbon tax agenda. But the American people are really almost pathetically inadequate when it comes to being citizens. We can see the disconnect. We have conversations with people all the time, and they usually come up spontaneously, and it absolutely astounds us to see how little the American people know about their country, about their constitution, about the way government is supposed to work. And we see a big deficit in our educational system, which I'm sure many of you have seen yourselves with your own kids and grandkids. We have a big problem, folks. And it's not a problem that's going to be solved overnight. And if any of you have ever watched any episodes of Jaywalking, you know, the comedian Jay Leno, you probably can recall some incredibly dumb people who were asked questions, I mean, simple questions like, what country is the Panama Canal in? And the fellow goes, I don't know. And Leno says, well, what country is the Great Wall of China in? And the guy goes, China. Leno goes, that's right. He goes, well, what country is the Panama Canal in? And the guy goes, China. And this is true. These are real people. In fact, somebody sent us an email just last week with some excerpts of Jaywalking, and we just sat here and howled. I mean, I don't know whether to laugh or to cry, because it's just mind-boggling to see how ignorant people are. I mean, when you look at people and they can't even point out a foreign country on a globe, and they don't have any idea about what's going on around them, it's so easy to see how quickly and easily they can be manipulated by a government or any entity that has, should I say, ulterior motives. And probably most of you would agree that there are a lot of ulterior motives floating around in this country, mostly birthed and promulgated by the banksters and the corporations, but willingly implemented, if you will, and policed by the so-called governments of the states and this nation. And again, go back to the people. If the people were paying attention, if they were minding the store, a lot of the problems that we are looking at and wringing our hands over would not exist, because they would have been nipped in the bud, which is what a self-governing nation is supposed to do. And when we lived in New Mexico, we encountered a lot of problems. And many of you know that situation. I won't go into it now. But suffice to say that our presence in New Mexico stirred up a lot of thinking and a lot of difficulty for some of the elected and appointed officials, because Jack and I don't go away quietly when things are wrong. We have a tendency to speak up, and we speak up longly and loudly until something gets done, and we take effective action to make sure it gets done, because we recognize that these public offices work for us. We're not their stooges. They're our servants. We are the masters, and it's up to us to steer the ship. So if Americans could ever get their mind wrapped around that concept, and if they could stop chasing rainbows and quick fix gimmicks that don't work, and stop thinking more about making a quick buck, and begin to recognize the awesome opportunity that the United States of America was and could be again for all people, then maybe we could focus on correcting our problems. Maybe we could actually find some way to reinvent the election process in which there would be fair elections, there would be paper ballots, there would be no more computerized voting machines, there would be no more multi-year-long campaigns that cost millions and billions of dollars. In fact, there would be, in my view, a very limited, maybe a three-month window for campaigning, and that would be it. And then, and only then, would somebody's vote matter. And this is another aspect that we sit here and just roll our eyes over. We see all of the falderal and the nonsense that's going on with the campaign, and he said, she said. It's nauseating. Does anybody really think it makes any difference which one of these stooges gets elected? The only person on the list that I would consider voting for is Ron Paul, the only one, because Mr. Paul does say much of what we believe to be true in terms of his view of the Constitution. However, we are seriously doubtful that he could be effective if he were ever to even get the nomination, which is unlikely. And if he did, and if he were effective, he would probably not have a very long lifespan. And I hate to say that, but these things are true. What happened to John F. Kennedy? Look what happened to Ross Perot. They didn't kill him, but they threatened his children, his family, and he had to drop out. And he was going great guns, and I think that had he stayed the course, he would have won. But he didn't because of the threat. Our own government threatened him.
Margie?
Yes.
This is Terry.
Hi, Terry.
One thing I'd like to contribute about Ross Perot is that they literally took out some of his staff, and not very many people recognize that, but there was a small plane crash in the middle of that right before his family got threatened, and a number of his staff were actually killed.
You know, I heard something about that a long time ago, and I totally forgot about that, Terry. You're right. And that's the level that these thugs will go to. I mean, does anybody think that John F. Kennedy Jr.'s plane crash was an accident? I don't think so.
I didn't. I'd like to.
I knew it right away. I knew that. You know, it was clear. And they tried to make him look like, oh, he's a Kennedy. You know, he must have been too casual. He really didn't know what he was doing. But the fellow who taught him to fly said he was an excellent pilot, and he didn't take chances, and he was well-versed in that airplane and the conditions. So, you know, we have to face facts that when things get too hot for these people, they take actions that are drastic and dire. And I would hate to see that happen to Ron Paul. Yet we don't have anybody in public office today, with the exception of maybe a handful of people, who have any concerns about the people at all. And I have to go back and say, we as a society have allowed this to happen because we've given up. 94% of incumbents who run for office get elected. Now, the last time it might have been slightly less because it was going to be the big purge, right? Maybe it was 90% or 91%. But when you think about that, folks, who is it that elects these people? Are we really that dense that we keep putting the same people in because, well, he's our congressman and he helped our kid get out of a jam or something? Or were the votes already rigged and there was no say-so anyway? No matter how you look at it, we don't have an avenue there. So what's the solution? The solution has to come from the people. And that's what Jack and I try to inculcate in people's minds. The solution is with the people. It is not with the politicians. It's not with the bureaucrats, not with the police. It's not with the system. It's with the people. And the people have to face that fact, and they have to own it. They have to own the responsibility that is incumbent on every single one of us as an adult and say, how can I make this better? What can I do? It starts with each one of us. Just like peace in the world starts with peace in our own heart, justice starts with each one of us, and so does a constitutional government. Back to you guys.
There's somebody online here that's been trying to get that last point that you made. Our resident guru here, Red Beckman, has been trying to get that point through our thick skulls for the last couple of years. And I'd just like for you to be introduced directly to Red Beckman. Red, would you like to say hello to Jack and Margie?
Well, I'm mighty glad that we've got them on the program, and this should be one of the best programs we've ever put out, because The law, as Jack and Marge put it out, is it just has been shoved aside by the legal profession and the politicians.
Yep.
And the judges. It's been they've told everybody that the common law doesn't exist anymore, and the common law courts aren't there anymore, and all this kind of thing. And there's some, you know, there's some good things happening out there, but they're not getting the coverage that they should.
Yes.
Go ahead.
That's true, Red. It's an honor to meet you on the phone, and thank you for speaking to this very sad fact that the law is being set aside, the real law, and the disregard that politicians and bureaucrats and police officers and military have for common law is shameful. It's absolutely shameful. But again, we have to look at the people and say, how did this happen? What were we doing? We were so busy living and chasing a buck and running amok, if you will, that we forgot the most important principles of our country. And it's time for us to, you know, pay the piper, so to speak, and get back to the basics again. And there's no other way to save America except buying through the basics. Nothing else is going to come close.
Red, did you want to
comment?
Red,
do you have
any
more comments?
Well, you know, I've been saying that. I had a call yesterday from a fellow, and he was, he's a long-time standard kind of a patriot, World War or Korean War veteran, Marine Corps, and all, and he's very much aware of what's going on in the country. But he went through a list. He just read Obama's book on Dreams of His Father, or whatever it was, and he. Was talking about Obama and how Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and some of these two or three others, all African Americans, were his guiding light, I guess. And he was saying how bad it was, and I said, "Well, I said I keep telling you." That they're not the problem. The problem is the stupid American out here that won't pay attention, and he's not involved, and he knows things are bad, but he's sitting back doing nothing. And I said, until these brain-damaged, brain-crippled mind Americans wake up and start paying attention, why you're going to have the people like Obama in public office.
That's absolutely true, Red. Until the people decide they've had enough, first of all, they have to wake up and they have to care. Once they learn what's going on, they have to be able to summon that sense of indignation, righteous indignation, to say, this stuff stops now, and it stops with me right here. We draw the line in the sand, the proverbial line, and we act on it. Unfortunately, what I see amongst Americans, at least the vast majority of the average guy and gal, is a group of people who are so exhausted, so busy, so brainwashed with propaganda, mindlessly believing that because America, you know, has a wonderful myth behind it, that it's the best, still the best country in the world, and anything that anyone says against America is unpatriotic, it's disloyal. Nothing could be further from the truth. A real patriot speaks the truth. A real patriot cares very much about the kind of things that are done in the name of his or her country. When I think of the unspeakable acts that are being conducted and committed by our soldiers every day throughout this world, it makes me want to cringe. Those things are being done in our name, and then they have the audacity to wonder why people in some foreign countries don't like Americans too much. Because they see us as this big bully, the war machine. And that's what we've become. We're the enforcer for the corporate banksters who want to rob and plunder and steal. And yet Americans still tell us, oh, well, we should support the military. And I, my argument with this is, wait a minute. If we have a military that takes orders and acts on the dictates of dictators, then what we have is a military dictatorship. It's cloaked as a constitutional republic, that's a joke, or it's cloaked as a democracy, another joke. But what we have is a military dictatorship that's imposing the will of the corporate and banking realities upon every other country on the planet. We've become the world bully. And the American people are foolish if they think that they should get out and wave flags for the military. Now, I don't mean to disrespect the men who went into the military in the old days because they thought they had to, they were drafted, they thought they were serving their country. Even they were fooled. Even they were duped into fighting unjust wars that were really about money, power, and control. But they didn't know that. The young people today, I think, are seduced into the military because they have few options. They cannot afford school. They're thinking they're going to make money, they're going to get a job or an MOS that's going to give them a skill when they get out of the service, et cetera. So they go in and they become nothing but hired killers. And it's ruining the morale of those young men. They come home and they're mentally and or physically broken. We're going to have a country full of basically debilitated young men and women. And how can that possibly be productive for us? And how can what we do overseas be looked at and justified in any way? It cannot be. The war on terror is a joke. This government and the Mossad are behind all the so-called terrorist organizations that they lay upon the Arabs. And yet you try to tell this to the average American and he'll run out of the room screaming. They don't want to hear. They are disconnected from the truth. There's a cognitive dissonance, and there's a mindset that is almost hypnotized to ignore the truth. They run from the truth, and yet they will swallow hook, line, and sinker all of the propaganda and fraud that's spewed on them virtually every day. It's a real dilemma, folks, and I don't know what the answer is.
Well, one of the things we try to do on this show, or we try to focus on solutions, Margie, and you know, a lot of people out there complaining and whining, and we try not to do too much of that here. We try to bring the solutions along with defining the problems, and that can be a challenge sometimes. And one of the reasons why I really wanted you and Jack to come on was because you guys are so good at articulating solutions. And in the short time that I've listened to you guys, I've been, you know, really pleased with what I've heard. And I don't say that about a lot of people, because so many people lay claims to having good information, and they come on a show like this and they really don't bring it forward to the people or put it out in a way that folks can understand it. I'd kind of like to ask you guys, I know that you've been doing a seminar, particularly about foreclosures and advising people on how they can protect themselves a little bit. If you guys wouldn't mind maybe taking 20 minutes or so and maybe kind of focusing on that topic for a little while, I think that there are some listeners here tonight that would really appreciate that.
We'd be happy to do that. We are about solutions, as you said, and even though things are bleak, it doesn't mean that there isn't any hope. The hope is in the people, as I said earlier. And when it comes to foreclosure, I think this is a problem that has hit virtually every family at some level. We know so many people who have either lost their homes or are dealing with foreclosure issues now that it's an epidemic, and it's tragic because it's happening in a fraudulent, illegal, and unjust manner, and nobody should lose their home by and through fraud. I don't know how many people out there have immediate problems, and I want to be clear that Jack and I do not give legal advice. We are not lawyers. We do not represent people in court. What we do is tell people what we would do if we were facing a situation like theirs, and only if we are asked. So that said, this is not given in the context of legal advice, but only in terms of information as to how one could look at a foreclosure situation. First of all, I think it's pretty well known that the vast majority of mortgages are sold multiple times, because every time there's a sale, there's money in it for the parties of the sale. those mortgages that are sold are also sold into securities. They're bundled. So the mortgage and the note, the original wedding signature, the documents that basically set up the so-called obligation of the poor homeowner to the illustrious bank, those documents are split, they're set aside, and effectively they are no longer enforceable, but most people don't know that. Now you have the mortgage services that come in. There's a lot of people, you know, taking a piece of pie. Most people have no idea who actually owns or holds their mortgage, which in some respects can be very confusing, but if you look at it from the terms of defending against a foreclosure, it actually can be very good. Because in order for a bank to have the legal right and authority to initiate a foreclosure proceeding, that bank must be the owner and the holder, the possessor of the original note and mortgage. And if the bank says that it's been assigned the note and mortgage, then the assignment must be done in a proper way in that it names the bank and it transfers with the assignment these original notes and mortgages. I think most people understand that this is not what's happening today. There are really very few people that have any idea about an original note and mortgage. The banks don't know what they do with them. Even the banks who say they don't sell their own mortgages, and this has happened to people that we know and that we have helped with information, because the banks will say, well, the note's been, well, it might have been lost. I think it was accidentally burned. There's always some excuse. They won't admit what's really going on. These notes are being securitized. They're gone. So if somebody's facing a foreclosure action, the first order of business is to challenge whether or not, the lender or the bank actually has these original documents in its possession, because if it doesn't, it has no standing to take the matter to court. It's the old adage, no ticky, no laundry. The old Chinese laundries used to have a ticket. They would give you a ticket to match your shirts. And when you showed up to pick up your shirts, if you didn't have the ticket, you didn't get the laundry. It didn't matter if they knew your name. You had to have the ticket. Well, the ticket to being able to foreclose legally and lawfully is to be the person who owns and holds the note. You have to have that in your possession before you even start foreclosure. And if you don't, then you're acting in fraud. Now, for a long time, this issue wasn't brought up, and I cannot for the life of me understand why, because it's the simplest, most basic concept. Jack and I have been talking about this virtually forever. Way back when people were beginning to trickle into the foreclosure avenue, we said, it's a very simple thing. And people would come to us and call us and say, well, so-and-so does this, and you have to do this and that, and it would be a convoluted process, trust documents, this, that, or the other thing. And we kept going back to the very basic. Who owns the note and mortgage? That's the entity with the authority to foreclose. If you can't locate that entity, if the fourth or fifth so-called lender, servicer, or whatever doesn't have these documents, then that entity has no authority to foreclose. Well, the reaction of most people was, it can't be that simple. And yes, it is. But you have to be able to articulate this. And you have to be able to make these arguments in an effective, cohesive way to your opponent, which in this case would be a bank. So what we would tell people we would do in a situation like this, if the foreclosure did not commence yet, in other words, there was a late payment or something happened or what have you, and maybe we were getting some dunning notices or possibly a warning that foreclosure could be imminent, we would write what we call a presumptive letter. And, Duane, I know you've heard us speak of these before, which we call them presumptive because they contain two paragraphs, one in the beginning and one at the end, that make certain presumptions as part of a lawful notification to the recipient. And the presumption is that what we're stating in the letter is true and correct, but if the entity receiving the letter thinks otherwise and can demonstrate this factually with particularity, then he's encouraged to do so. And if he doesn't, then his failure to rebut our statements and charges and claims is his admission that they are true and correct, fully binding upon him in any court without his protest, objection, or that of those who represent him, meaning his would-be lawyer. So we would start our action there by addressing a letter to the bank and making statements, statements which they would have to rebut if they disagreed. And the statements, of course, would go along the lines that they do not own and possess the original note and mortgage, or they don't have the proper assignment with them, et cetera. And we would basically challenge them on that level. Now, we have helped people with these letters, and I'll tell you, sometimes it's a struggle because if you folks haven't noticed lately, not too many Americans are very, very skilled at writing letters or spelling or using grammar, proper syntax. I mean, it's just, it's frightening. Jack and I were both good in English. I was an English major, and I shriek when I see some of the things that come into us. And it's not that I blame the poor people. I think it's tragic that they don't even know how to express themselves in their own language. So we've had to basically educate people on how to write. So it's a cumbersome process initially. But when they get it and they send a letter off, sometimes they'll get a letter back from the bank that talks in absolutely ridiculous terminology but says nothing. Some of them are getting letters back from the bank saying that, we have to go to the custodian of the note, which is a tip-off right there, that if they don't have the note, then they don't possess it, do they? One half of the equation has been revealed. Others have actually had the temerity and the stupidity to say, oh, well, Fannie Mae owns your note now, so they don't own it either, and yet they're threatening to initiate foreclosure proceedings. That's fraud. You see, when you bring a court action into a court, you have to have a valid position to do so. You have to have standing. And the court rules require that an action be commenced and prosecuted in the name of the real party in interest. It comes under, in the federal rules of civil procedure, it's Rule 17A. And the state rules usually parallel it under 17 or 17A as well. So when a party goes to court, he has to be who he says he is. And if he isn't who he says he is, then he cannot really bring into play the lawful jurisdiction of the court, which is an avenue that people are beginning to use and win. Because if there is no valid subject matter jurisdiction because the parties are not the proper parties before the court, the court can't hear the matter at all, and it has to dismiss it with prejudice. That's a very simple way to win. And there are court cases that are being decided in various states throughout the country that are upholding people's rights and are upholding the premise that unless the foreclosing entity owns and possesses the note and mortgage before the foreclosure action is initiated and they can demonstrate that they have these documents, the court will dismiss the case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Very, very important. And this is so simple, and it sounds almost too easy, that a lot of people just miss the point. And again, we've talked to people 10, 8, 12, 9, 3, 4, 5 years ago about this very subject. And they said, oh, well, I don't think it's that easy. And they've gone around the ballpark. They've done many convoluted methods, and they've lost. And they've lost their homes. And they've come back to us in hindsight and said, gee, I wish I'd listened. I just saw such and such a case was decided, and that's the thing you told me 5 years ago. I wish I would have listened. Yeah, I wish you would have listened, too. So, you know, we have a tendency as human beings to overcomplicate things. But Jack and I like to say it very simply, and we tell people to keep it simple. You know the old KISS rule? Keep it simple, sovereign. Mm-hmm. Some people say stupid. We like sovereign. Keep it simple, sovereign. Go to the most important point, make your argument. So we make it in a letter. 99.99% of the times, we don't get an answer, or if we get an answer, it is completely off point. It doesn't address the subject matter. It doesn't rebut the arguments and claims and statements that we've made. So we inform them politely by means of an affidavit that they failed to respond and rebut in kind with particularity to the statements, charges and claims that we've made. Therefore, they've admitted to them. And then we will say to them some of the things to which you have admitted include but are not limited to the following. And we'll list some of the things that we have stated. And we tell them that if they disagree, this is another opportunity for them to make it right by means of their own sworn and notarized affidavit. Again, supporting their arguments and rebuttals with fact, valid law, and evidence, and attested to in front of a notary signed under the penalties of perjury. Guess what? We never get one of those because they cannot rebut or refute the claims and statements we've made because we are based in fact, law, and truth, and they're usually based in fraud.
Well, Margie, I've witnessed four different levels of documentation that need to be considered in what you just said. The first being, of course, the possession of the original note, which I'll come back to in a second. The second being the assignment of the ownership of that note. The third being an actual agency relationship, a written agency relationship between the purported note holder and the managing company that's managing these notes for them, or Visa Trust, or whatever they have. And the fourth level is an engagement letter with the legal counsel. We've also found that many of these legal counsels come forth with this documentation and come into court without the proper engagement letter. So there's actually, those are the four different levels of which, in essence, you have to be able to face your accuser, as I heard you and Jack say before,
yes.
At every opportunity, you should be afforded the opportunity to face your accuser, and that accuser has to be in proper title of their position. Would that be a good way to put it, or do you have a different
standing to make the accusation in the first place? They have to demonstrate that they've been injured in some way to have the standing. That means they have to have had the original note and mortgage and be vested in it. These fly-by-night, you know, changes from one hand to the next don't qualify. And the lawyers who are bringing these cases to court, they are bringing them without vetting the information. And this is coming back to haunt them. In some states, they are facing serious sanctions because what they're doing when they bring something to court, they're supposed to represent to the court under Rule 11 of Rules of Civil Procedure that they have basically presented true and correct information to the best of their knowledge. If they don't vet the information that they're getting from these fly-by-night bankers, then they're not living up to their responsibilities under Rule 11. So there's a serious breach there, and many states are now beginning to impose sanctions upon them, and they have to do affidavits demonstrating that they have vetted the information, that it is true and correct, that they have the original documents in their possession before they initiated foreclosure proceedings. So there are some changes coming, but you're right. All of those aspects are avenues for people to basically attack, rebut, and refute. In fact, most of the wins that are happening in foreclosure that we are aware of are based on the same principles that we're talking about tonight, advocating for the rights that we do constitutionally and on the avenues that we are suggesting that people attack, namely, of course, principally the lack of the original note and mortgage.
Okay, I'd like to come back to the issue of the original note for a minute, because I don't know if this is something you've run across, but it's something we've run across here in Colorado. And a very good friend of mine I'm about to say something that I shouldn't admit. I have a good friend that's an attorney.
I have a son that's an attorney. I won't hold it against you.
So forgive me for that. But anyway, he may be listening tonight. I invited him to, if he had time, which he's really packed with his schedule, but I invited him to listen in tonight and possibly call in. But what he's discovered is very important. He's discovered that these companies, these law firms that are taking on, sometimes up to 30 of these foreclosures a day in one state, these law firms who only have usually four or five people working in them, it takes a law firm in a public trustee state like Colorado, it takes them about probably a good day, maybe a day and a half, to really work up a proper file with all the right documentation and everything in it to do it right. And these companies that only have 3 or 4 people in them are filing 30 foreclosures a day. Well, there's no way that this documentation is proper. And there's in this state, and you may know of other states, but at least in Colorado, they have what's called a qualified lender rule. In other words, if you're not just Joe Blow who owns a mortgage someplace, but you're a regular lender, then you can file basically an affidavit that says that you have, that the person representing you has actually seen the original note. And they can sign an affidavit to that effect, and the courts will let it go right on through. And it's actually a part of the rules here in the state. Well, what happens is where these firms that are filing 30 of these on a day are committing forgery. They haven't seen these notes, and in some cases, on the copy of what they put in, it even says copy on it. I mean, yes. I'm not saying that they've written copy on it. I'm saying that what they photocopied had copy on it, which means it was not an original, and they are swearing that they've seen the original and committing fraud.
That's blatant fraud. It's perjury. When they do it under an attestation with an affidavit, that's perjury. Those are serious crimes. But these people are, they're running foreclosure mills. And the reason I think that's been so rampant is because the vast majority of foreclosures are not even contested. And this is another thing that's really tragic. People get, they go into a state of shock when they're facing loss of their home. It's a personal failure on so many levels. Maybe they've lost a job, maybe there's illness, whatever. But they're already beaten down. And when they get hit with foreclosure, it's like they can't function. They don't know what to do. They don't know who to turn to. They can't afford a lawyer, whatever. So they just kind of give up. And it's been a slam dunk for these attorneys firms, these foreclosure mills, and unscrupulous bankers for a long time now. And we really do need to turn the tables on that. I mean, they're very, very skillfully stealing the wealth of the middle class or what's left of it right out from under our noses. And they're doing it in fraud, and deception. It's outright theft. And it's totally unjust. It rankles both Jack and my sensibilities that this is happening and continuing to happen. And we are just, at this point in time, seeing just a glimmer of hope because there have been a few courageous judges in a few courts, and it's starting to get more frequent now, who are saying, no, we're not going to put up with that. We're not going to allow this because you don't have the standing to initiate this action. And if we can get more people to fight and do it properly and basically not quit until they get the results that they want, maybe we can start turning the tide, because we're in a very precarious position in that respect. When somebody loses his home, that's a very big dent in a person's psyche. It really is a terrible blow.
Well, there's no question of that. That just compounds the stress that they've already got on them. I know that we've... Charles in our chat room has been posting your website and YouTube information, and I think it would be good for those listeners who are not looking at our chat online for you to give them a little bit of information about how they can get more information about your website and et cetera.
I would be glad to. If you want to go to the website, our URL is you have to use the whole one right now because we just switched domain name. So it's http://www.citizensoftheamericanconstitution.net. It used to be .org, but we had a problem with our domain name, so now we're .net. But you can access it that way, that's citizensoftheamericanconstitution.net. And when you get onto the website, there are some videos on there with some excerpts from some of the seminars we did in Maui. And I believe in some of the videos we are discussing some aspects of foreclosure. And in addition to that, we have done a couple of discussions of foreclosure in some of the newsletters that we used to do. And in particular, you can go to our newsletter section and click on the link for the newsletter archive. And if you do that, you can look for the Thanksgiving 2009 newsletter and the December 28th, 2010 newsletter. That's Thanksgiving 2009 and December 28th, 2010. Both of those newsletters contain discussions of foreclosures and our take on things, which you might find helpful. And
thank
you
very
always,
much.
You're welcome. You can always email us at takebackourrights@yahoo.com. Takebackourrights@yahoo.com.
Well, Margie, I don't know if you know it or not, but Red Beckman wrote a book by the title Do Unto the IRS as They Would Do Unto You.
Yeah, I love it. I've not read the book, but I love the title, and I've wanted to read it.
Well, Red, why don't you jump in here? We don't have to stay on foreclosure all night. We've spent a good 20 minutes on that. So if you would like to kind of shift the thinking here, Red, I IRS might be a good place to go.
On this foreclosure thing, you see, there was a real estate bubble that was created by basically bankers were told by some politicians and such that they were to get people into these homes that were priced way, way beyond what people could pay. They didn't have the income, they didn't have the resources, but they could move into a $250,000-$300,000 home with any down payment or anything. And the advice I gave a lot of people was, hey, you're way in over your heads. Your house on the market, if it's sold on the market right today, it isn't going to come anywhere near the amount you supposedly owe. And when that happens, you know, you've got a disaster for a lot of people, and including some of the bankers and such, and builders, a lot of people got hurt. And I told people, a lot of people, I said, quit making your payments and take that money that you would make in that payment and put it in a separate account. And you stay right in that house as long as you can, and you keep piling up those payments in that separate account. And this way, the little people didn't get hurt so bad. And, of course, right here where I'm at, Longview, Kelso area of Washington State, the prices of homes is still going down. It hasn't changed. On a monthly basis here, the newspaper will report what's going on in the real estate situation. And they keep saying the price of housing is down again another month. And it goes on and on and on. And if people would just... say, hey, I'm staying in this house as long as I can, and of course, I find this absolutely hilarious that these judges or these banks can't find those notes. And of course, we've got a few judges in the country that are insisting that the banks must have the original note or they aren't going to foreclose on anybody. But it's such a mess, and it's been created by dishonest people. And whenever you have dishonest people create something as big as this is, you're going to be a long time bringing the thing back and getting it back on track. It's not going to happen easy, I'll tell you. I've always been an optimist. I'm an optimist because I have a Christian faith that ties me over pretty well, and I know that there's going to maybe some major adjustments. And I just recently found out about something that is so vital and it's so interesting. And I'll read a little bit of it here. There was an article titled, Why Summary Judgment is Unconstitutional, published by the Virginia Law Review. Suja, I don't know how they pronounce it, S-U-J-A, A. Thomas, a law professor at the University of Cincinnati, makes the perfectly plausible argument that the procedures violates the Seventh Amendment, which reserves the job of determining the facts in civil cases to juries. Now,
correct.
This Seventh Amendment is coming back, is coming alive. For the last 15 years, I guess, I've been asking attorneys what the Seventh Amendment has to say, and you just don't find an attorney that knows what the Seventh Amendment is about at all. And so I've been talking this up for a long time, and of course I sued a federal judge using the Seventh Amendment back in 93, and that's been, 19 years ago I was talking Seventh Amendment, and I'm rather noisy about it. I say that the Seventh Amendment is by far the most important of all the 10 articles of the Bill of Rights. And so when I was made aware of this article in this law review. It said, when judges decide summary judgment motions, and I had this happen to me I don't know how many times. I've had a judge throw a case out, the Justice Department will put in a motion for a summary judgment. And for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted, and they call it frivolous and all that. But this Professor Thomas wrote, they intrude on that job, the job that the jury does. The theory of summary judgment is that judges may rule on one side or the other only after finding that no genuine issues of material fact are in dispute. And, of course, this just... It's been used so much in the courts in this country, summary judgment on cases, IRS cases and such. And I put out a letter quite some years back about how that the judges in the courts are nothing more than government agents. They're government employees. They're beneficiaries of the tax laws, and here they are with that serious conflict of interest, and they're summarily throwing people out of court, who have gone to the courts for remedy. And so here we've got a law professor, and of course I know of several now in the country that are picking up on this theme, and I don't feel too lonely anymore when I talk about the Seventh Amendment and the power of the Seventh Amendment, the common law jury. So I see these things coming, and they're coming along slower than we like, perhaps. But many times I say that we've got a light at the end of the tunnel, and it isn't a freight train. You know, when I first started in this battle, boy, I was pretty lonely. I didn't know about Jack and Marge and what they're doing. And, of course, they didn't know what I was doing either. And how many more are there like this around the country? I'm sure they were pretty lonely when they first started, just like I did. And, of course, I was in the service in the Korean War, and when I came out of there, I knew. There was no question in my mind that I knew that we had a criminal government. I had seen it in action, and so it's been a long ways because of those people out there that refuse to become, activists and be involved. They're waiting for somebody else to do it for them. And so I'm just glad that we've got Jack and Marge on the program tonight, and I'm not alone, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. We appreciate you, too, and I know what you mean about feeling alone. And I also know what you mean about the Seventh Amendment. Jack and I have been making the same points that you're making tonight for years and years about that, because we know how many people have had the shaft handed to them because of these summary judgments. And they're totally denied their right to have a trial by jury and have the matter decided on the facts by and through a jury. And it's just a rotten situation the way it's done. And it's foisted on people, and most people don't understand what's going on. Next thing they know, they're tossed out of court, their case is over, and they lost big time. It's just, it's tragic.
Yeah, well, you see, you see, the Seventh Amendment, it is so powerful, and I say the Seventh Amendment common law jury is the highest court in the land, because no court in the land can tamper with their decision. They can't tamper with their facts, and so here we have we've got 5 years ago. You didn't hear state legislators and such talking about the sovereignty of the states and the sovereignty of the individual. The Seventh Amendment is the strongest thing we've got in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to confirm the fact that there is sovereignty. And it rests with the people. It does not rest with the judges. It doesn't rest with the constitutional or the senators and the president, the congressmen and such. It doesn't rest with them. It's with the we, the people. That's where the sovereignty is, and the Seventh Amendment confirms that. And that's the real value of the Seventh Amendment, as far as I'm concerned.
We agree with you, Red. This is Jack. It's a pleasure to meet you. I've heard of you for years. I never met you before. I never had a chance to communicate with you. But our appreciations for all the work you've done on behalf of the American people for many, many years. I agree with you on the Seventh Amendment. I agree with you on summary judgment, okay? I also agree with you that the power rests within the people. However, my friends, the people do not use their power. They simply do not use it. And the bottom line is,
if they don't know it, they don't use it.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And the bottom line is, throughout history, power has used its power against the powerless to expand that power and bring everyone within that power base. And America is certainly no exception to that. Now, getting back to the Constitution and getting back to the founding of the Constitution, we've mentioned this before when we spoke with Duane, so forgive us for getting into it again. But we look at the Constitution as a divinely inspired document. And if you look at the times and the turmoil that existed prior to 1787 and the state of the nation at that time, okay, it was in a panic formation. It was all astray. It was confused, and that's what evil likes. Evil likes confusion. When the Constitution was put together, there are a lot of bad points within the Constitution. A lot of bad points. That's what evil wanted. There are good points within the Constitution. That's what divinity wanted. And the most divine position in that document is what Margie mentioned earlier. The divinity in that document rests in the fact that the power over the government was given to the people. But just as the people 2,000 years ago did not protect the man they call God and let him die upon the cross, the people back in 1787 and ever since have thrown the gift of divinity back into the face of the giver, because the people of this nation as a society have never in the history of this nation ever enforced the Constitution upon government. Red has, we have, other people have within that society, but the American people have never done that. So yes, the power rests within the people, but if the people do not exercise their power because they don't even know it exists and they don't know they have it, then it's no good to them. Now, in seminars, when we speak to people about the state of affairs in the nation, and we talk about situations that happen, and I've made predictions for years, and virtually every prediction has come true. I predicted the financial debacle that took place in 2008, started in 2008, back in 2005, and I also predicted the housing crisis. And Red was absolutely correct when he said that this was a planned position between banks and politicians. He's absolutely correct. It was an unsigned, unspoken policy called open housing, okay? Now, that's the slang word. There are technical words for it, but open housing was the slang word. The government wanted everyone in this country to own a home, whether that person could afford that home or not, because the government knew exactly what would take place. And the American government is the worst enemy of the American people. It's not Russia, not China. It wasn't Gaddafi, certainly not Gaddafi, one of the best men who ever existed. And look what happened to him. The American government is the enemy of the American people. The American judicial system is the most corrupt in the history of existence, and this nation is the most evil nation that has ever existed upon this earth, okay? It is not what people think it is. But again, if people don't know because they've never been exposed to the truth, they're going to buy the propaganda. So what we tell people who say, hey, America's not that bad off, America is a good nation, there are good people in America, we say something like this. Folks, there are good Americans in America and there are bad Americans in America. We define good American as those people who honor, respect, and cherish the founding documents of this nation, namely the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the Constitution. They promulgate these documents. They use these documents to protect their rights, and they enforce these documents upon reluctant government. Bad Americans do none of that. Now, taking the definition that we just gave you for good Americans, how many good Americans do you know in your circle of friends, your family, your working associates, your playmates, your schoolmates, anyone you know. And that usually quiets them up very quickly. Because if you take the average guy, in his circle of friends, there are no good Americans. And if you multiply that average guy by 315 other average Americans, you can see the desperate straits this nation is in. The people are not supporting the Constitution. Now, we have supported the Seventh Amendment forever. Okay, Red makes a very good point on this. The decisions must be made by the people in an Article III court in a constitutional setting pursuant to the guarantees within the Seventh Amendment. But what the judges do is grant summary judgment all the time, which completely throws due process of law out the window because, as Red pointed out, summary judgment can only be granted when there are no lingering issues before the court or matters in controversy. And there's always something in controversy when due process of law is being denied. And that's what this nation does. It denies due process of law. Now, I'll tell you something that we came across not too long ago, maybe a year or so ago. We did a little study as to how many people unrepresented by attorney have won in federal court in the last 10 years. Does anyone care to venture any guesses? Zero.
Right.
Zero. Not one person in this country unrepresented by attorney as one as a plaintiff in federal court. Now, we just helped a fellow in Hawaii win in federal court, not as a plaintiff, as a defendant. And their record of American citizens as defendants, unrepresented by attorneys in federal courts, is also disastrous. But this one fellow in Hawaii recently stuck to his guns on the Constitution and had something like 8 charges dismissed against him in a federal court. So the people can be victorious if they get serious, but they're not serious. They're dull-witted. I hate to say this. I've lived all over the world. And what I'm about to say, I really don't want to say, but Margie and I deal in truth. The average American is the most stupid person I've ever met in my life, okay? He may be a good person, he may be a kind person, but he's not working with any intelligence at all. He's certainly not working with any common sense. And I say that the average American is so stupid, he doesn't even know he's stupid. And that type of person is very easily controlled because in his stupidity, he really thinks he has intelligence. I mean, who in his right mind votes? Does a vote count in a corrupt system, in a corrupt nation? Of course not. We have to really get serious if we want to take our nation back. And the only hope this nation has is within the people. We're not going to have some planetary system 47,000 light years from here come down and save us. It's not going to happen, folks, okay? I don't think we're going to have a second coming that's going to save us either. God helps those who help themselves. If we're not helping ourselves, why would God want to help us? Now, I got a piece of good news the other day that I thought was going to be tragic, and it turned out exactly the opposite way because Margie and I prayed and prayed and prayed on this matter, and the matter was resolved in our favor, okay? God helps those who help themselves. The American people do not help themselves. They do everything the system wants them to do. And if you take those figures, all those, let's say, very loose figures that we talked earlier about concerning good Americans and bad Americans, and you apply actuarial averages to them, which is exactly what insurance companies, banks, corporations, and governments do, as long as 99.9999% of the American people support virtually everything government does government have to wonder how the American people are going to react? Of course not. The government of the United States of America is the enemy of the American people. And every government in this nation, with very few exceptions, is the enemy of the people in that particular jurisdiction. Okay? We do not address, as a society, those problems. We don't address, as a society in any state, those problems. We, as a society, talk a lot. We do very little. We do not, for instance, I'll give you an example. My sister sent me an email, and she's, I don't know how, she's a lot younger than I am, but she remembers an incident that took place probably 42 years ago, okay, in which there was an accident, and she was a very young girl, maybe 4 or 5 years of age. She could have died because her wrists were slashed in an accident, okay? I hurriedly threw sheets over the wrists and bound them as quickly as I could, and I rushed her off to a hospital. And on the way, I saw a cop car, and I flagged it down. I get out quickly. I explained the situation. I asked for an escort to the hospital. They took me there immediately, okay? That was 40 years ago. What do you think would happen today if someone did that to a cop? He'd probably get shot or tased to death, no matter what the emergency is. And that's because we, the American people, have let the cops and the government get away with bloody murder. People are getting shot and tased to death every day in this nation. And what do the people do about it? Nothing. What did the people do about Waco? Nothing. Okay? What did the people do about Randy Weaver? Nothing. We met Randy Weaver several years ago up at the Browns in New Hampshire, and we did a radio program from that location. We had never met Randy before, but we had a good conversation that night. And that poor guy had most of his family destroyed by 500 American troops killing American citizens because Randy Weaver wanted to expose the drug trade that was going on in that county, and the American people did nothing. So, Red, I don't have any faith in the American people. I have faith in you, Dwayne, and some of the other people in this country who are trying to make a difference. But as far as the American people as a society, I have zero faith in them. And as a matter of fact, we retired last year. We announced our retirement last year from the sovereignty movement or the patriot movement because we really don't see much in it. We see a lot of talk. We don't see a lot of action. We have tried for years to get people in communities to gel together to take action. One or two might do it. The rest are just standbys. They're sunshine patriots, okay, as Sam Adams mentioned many, many years ago. Or as Mark Twain said, and I can't quote him exactly, but he said something like this: in perilous times, the patriot is a rare man, hated, scorned, and loathed. But when he begins to gain victories, the timid join him, because then it costs nothing to become a patriot. So, folks, we have to stop talking and start acting. The methods that Red has been teaching for years are very effective. Okay, the methods that we've been teaching for years are all based on the Constitution. These are not Jack and Margie methods. Okay, these are constitutional methods that we have taken and adapted to protect the American people. And we've won many victories in trying to do this, but we're only two people. We need a whole nation to support the Constitution. Now, that's my two bits for right now. I'll remain quiet and let someone else take the stage.
Well, if it's going to be quiet, I'll step in for a minute. And I'd like to just add for a moment that as Jack said, and Red and Jerry, we all say all the time, there's just not enough people out there that really seem to want to be interested. I think the Father is narrowing us down, just like he did in the book of Gideon, or in the book of Judges with Gideon against the Midianites. But also, you have to remember that there's a strong delusion being sent us, the Bible's talking about. And that strong delusion, I think, is coming in the form of fluoride. I think through the satanic television, the high-definition entrancement system that they have in place is lullabying 99% of the people to sleep. I think the few that are loyal and at least listening, like we have on this call here, there's a lot of great listeners on this call, they have a great knowledge, and a lot of them are doing a lot, but it's a very small percentage. When you realize that I think it was about 3-5% that fought the Revolutionary War, we're at about that number here at best. So I think the Father can do something with that so long as we remain faithful. And I think that the old adage, one plus God is the majority. So I like to keep that in mind, but at the same time, I do believe that the Father wants to see enough of us that it's justifiable to him to save us as a nation. Otherwise, he's going to pick a few of us out of here and destroy the rest of us. And that's kind of what I think might be coming here. So I'll step down off of that soapbox, and I'm glad I kept it short for a change. But go ahead, guys.
Well, Red, I'm sure you've got plenty to contribute after that.
I don't know where to start. You know, I think of the parallel. Back in 1215 A.D., now that's 1,000 years ago or thereabouts, a little more, I guess. Anyway, they had a king over there in England, King John, and he was quite an outlaw. And he said the king owns all the land, all the property belonged to the government, and that the people are just serfs on the land, and that they have to pay a percentage of their productivity to the government. Well, you know, people, they accuse me of going so far back. They say, you don't have to go that far back. Well, I think we need to go that far back because that is what gave birth to the Magna Carta over there in England. And the king was just so outrageous, such a tyrant, and his own administrators, the barons, in his government. Rebelled, and they met secretly, and they produced the Magna Carta, the Great Charter of England, and took it to King John and said, sign this. And King John looked at it, and he said, no, I'm not going to sign that. He was at the top of the heap, and the pecking order is what I like to excuse me, I like to call it the pecking order. And he was at the top, and he had every intention of staying there. And the barons told him, they said, well, you either sign it or we're going to go to war against you. And they had to make war against King John, and they captured King John in the meadow at Runnymede. And they held him at the point of their sword, and they said, King John, you will sign Magna Carta, or you're going to die right here. And King John signed Magna Carta. And everything was turned upside down. The people became sovereign. It was written right into the law that they were to be armed and so that they could protect themselves from government. And the king was on the bottom of the pecking order. Now, we have the same identical situation today. The government owns all the property. My wife was just saying today, she said, we've got to remember that we've got to pay those property taxes on property we still own in Montana. You see, they own the land, and we're just tenants on the land. And the government is at the top of the heap in the pecking order. And of course, I believe, and I'm beginning to get a lot of other people that agree with me. I tie that into the temptation of Christ after he was spent 40 days in the wilderness fasting and such, and Satan came to him and took him up on a high mountain and showed him the kingdoms of the earth. Now, the kingdoms of the earth, they represent all the wealth and the power. The wealth and power is what makes kingdoms. And he said, if you will bow down and serve me, I'll give you all of this. And he goes on, Luke 4:6, and he says, for these were presented to me. He has a claim. Lucifer, Satan, he claims the wealth and power and the kingdoms of the earth. And, of course, every government that comes along, barons of England, well, there was 40-some times between 1215 A.D. and 1776 and the Declaration of Independence here, there was something like 43 times that the people of England had to bring their king back under the law, and there was 23 times that they had to take the sword and bring the king back into his position, proper position, as a servant of the people rather than the master. In this country, we have a situation where, you know, everything is intolerable as far as I'm concerned and everything, but we've got millions upon millions of people out there that don't want to listen to us. They don't want to be involved, and they're paying a price, and they just don't realize how much of a problem they are with their ignorance. They don't realize that what they have done to their own country and to their own fellow Americans. And so I look around and I see where the problem is. Of course, it's all the neighbors and family and such that won't pay attention and everything. But there is one problem that is just a real sore point with me, and that's the churches in our country teaching the theological error. If the churches in this country were teaching, not teaching the theological error that is so dominant, it doesn't make any difference what denomination it is. They're all teaching theological error of one kind or another, and people are listening and they're not checking out what their preachers are saying. And so we've got a lot of places to put the blame for everything, but there's been more than one parallel in history, where we're at. Satan, Lucifer, he will work at it. No matter what kind of a government you have, he's going to try to get his people, his minions, those that pray to him, those that worship him. He promises them the wealth, the power, and the kingdoms of the earth if they will bow down and serve him. And I'll tell you, we've got a lot of them that are doing that, and a lot of them are right in the pulpits in this country, in our churches. And so I hope for the best in this country. But I keep reminding people that Isaiah was a great prophet in the Old Testament. He was the prophet to the 10 tribes of Israel. And they did not heed his warning, and they were taken into captivity and such. And here was one of the greatest prophets that we have in the entire Bible, and he was not successful in getting people to listen to him. And, of course, there's no promise that Jack and Red Beckman and Marge are going to win, that we're going to gain, but we are going to be able to have a record when we go on into the next life. We're going to have a record that will, you know, be our ticket to eternity with our Heavenly Father. And that's what we've all got to work for. We might not change the country, but we can sure help a lot of people change their hearts and get their eyes in the right direction, focused in the right direction. We hope for the best for this country, but until we have some repentance, it isn't going to happen. So I'll give it back to you, Terry.
Well, we've got about 23 minutes left, and I just want to make sure that we cover everything that Jack and Marty want to cover. You know, we've thrown out a couple of different things, but, you know, maybe there was something that you had, especially that you'd like to get out there tonight. Jack, is there something along those lines?
There's something I'd like to put forth, and then I'll pass the baton back to Jeff. There's something I'd like to read to you, a few sayings and a little bit of an essay, because it really goes right to what Red was just speaking of and what Jack and I have been speaking of tonight and for a long time here. And the title of the essay is Only a Virtuous People. And you might surmise that it was written by the quote by Benjamin Franklin, which says, "Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters." Think about that. Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. When the American colonists were contemplating self-government, newspapers around the country demonstrated examples that made it painfully clear that they were not ready. This began a tide of moral reform in the colonies. As the colonists became more virtuous, they began to take a more personal interest in the affairs of government and called for a speedy separation from England. As they became more virtuous, the abuses of King George became more intolerable for them to bear. And in 1798, John Adams pointed out that our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. He said that in October of 1798, on the 11th of October. And James Madison warned us about apathy towards government when he said, "I go on this great Republican principle that the people will have virtue and intelligence to select men of virtue and wisdom. Is there no virtue among us? If there be not, we are in a wretched situation. No theoretical checks, no form of government can render us secure." And John Adams said in 1775, the Republican governments could be only by pure religion or austere morals. Public virtue cannot exist in a nation without private virtue. And public virtue is the only foundation of republics. Now, another quote here. Despotism may govern without faith, but liberty cannot. Religion is much...
Well, can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
Dwayne, are you still on? I believe Dwayne dropped, and he's got Jack and Margie on. I'm sure he'll call back in quickly, so we'll just we'll help cover that. I wrote something the other day that on a blog on Dr. Tate's blog, actually, in response to some questions regarding somewhat of the topic that she was just speaking. So I'll just throw out a quick reading of my comment, if I can keep from sneezing. In ecclesiastical settings, just like government, centralized planning is a serious problem. Church organizations, particularly where local autonomy is diminished or removed, fall prey to tradition becoming law, and the individual is dumbed down to letting others think for them, if not interfere with their personal relationship with the Creator. I personally do not adhere to any church group's dictates. I detest religion to the extent that Christ revealed its false pride, distraction from truth, hypocrisy, and self-righteousness. I do adhere to unity in Christ and the authority of Scripture. I find creeds divisive and those who enjoy the seats of importance especially detestable. My only king is Yeshua the Christ, and fully trust only the guidance of the Spirit that the Father sent in His name. For me, it is a matter of relationship, not religion. Religion saves no one. And I kind of feel the same way, Red, about parties. You know, political parties. I feel the same way. It's people got to get back to thinking for themselves and recognizing that their relationship with God is more important than all the rest of this stuff put together. Your comment on that? Red, are you still there? Well, I hope we didn't lose Red. Red, are you still there?
Do you hear me now? Do you hear me?
Yes, I do. Red, I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. I had something I wanted to say, and now I forgot it. I was checking my phone here if I had it on mute or something. You know, we just have to look at history and see how people, you know, how they let government become their master over and over and over again. And we look at the history of the children of Israel in the Old Testament, and how God would bless them. Excuse me. God would serve the true God. And then they would go off and serve false gods, and they'd have nothing trouble. Now, why in the world couldn't they seem to learn that serving the true God the best way to live, the best way to conduct the affairs of a country. But invariably, they would be blessed as long as they served the true God, and then they would drift off and serve other gods. And we have so many other gods in our world today that small g gods. The professional sports. You know, we know that there's so much of it that is rigged. I'll never forget when the Seattle NFL football team, they felt that they were robbed when they played in the Super Bowl. I don't remember what year it was because I don't follow that too well, too much. But the coach, he came right out and said that it was rigged. And I thought, well, boy, he'll get a big fine for that. But nothing was said. Everybody wanted to keep it quiet. And so what we've got is it's a small g god at work. And all of that, the monstrous salaries that they pay these people, and so many of them can barely read or write, but they can throw a basketball through the hoop, and they can run for touchdowns and all that. And people just get all excited and everything. And, of course, the same thing goes for the elections. A lot of people celebrated when Obama was elected. Oh, that was a great thing. That was a thrill. And look what we got. We got another small G God, and you can tell who these people are that are serving these false gods, because they're still promoting and they're still going to vote for Obama for a second term. And so, it could be very discouraging. It could be, cause a person to want to crawl into a hole and pull a hole in behind you, you know, but that's not the way we are to function. We are to be a voice crying in the wilderness. If we're only one way, we need to be there where we can speak out. And so I don't know, but I'm an optimist, because I know that our Heavenly Father is going to win. He's going to redeem His planet. And, of course, that's another study that we need to get into some week with the show, is talking about the redemption of planet Earth. And it's going to happen, but there's going to be a lot we've got those people at Agenda 21. They want to liquidate, like 80-90% of the population. Well, that's a lot of people that they want to eliminate. And those people are small g gods that are trying their best to make things go the way they want. And so we've got some interesting future out there for us, and it's going to pay to have the kind of relationship with your Creator, to where you have the vision, you have the eyesight, you have the hearing that you need to recognize what's happening and make sure that you're on the right side, serving the capital G God instead of a small g God. Or having a lot of small g gods. And we've got a world out there that's in a heap of trouble, and it's all because of all the small g gods that people are so busy worshiping out there all across this planet. And so I'll turn it back to you, Terry.
Well, we're kind of hoping that that Dwayne will get back in here with us. We got about 12 minutes left. I know that Kate's trying to contact him right now. I'm hoping everything's okay with his connection, but I'm sure they'll be getting back in with us here in just a moment. I'd like to give a shout out about next Wednesday's show with Dr. Kate on Revolution Radio. Last night's show was very interesting. And about discernment and deception. And we really just got started good. If we go at the same pace we went last night, we may need a couple more shows to really get into that discussion deep. But, Red, I hope you'll join us next Wednesday night for that. And I know that Dwayne and Kate and I are looking very much forward to that show and continuing that discussion. I believe Jack and Margie would contribute to that as well if they were up to it. But this concept of discernment at this point is becoming really critical for those of us who really want to be on the front lines and be doing something about it, and not just talking about it, as Jack and Margie brought out. Red, you've been a shining example of that over the years, and you certainly inspired me to become quite passionate about this. I don't think the rest of my life is going to be very much like the first 56 years of it. The last 4 years have been very different for me, and I believe that the balance is going to be very much along the same path as you read. And I'm looking forward to putting some of the things that I've learned into action. You know, we try to bring these solutions forward, but in some cases, we just got to take the bull by the horns and do it in our own life. And that can be a real challenge. I mean, let's face it. Look at what's happened to a lot of the others who have really taken on the enemy. We've got what some people call the Ezra Pound syndrome out there, where if they can't shut you up, they're going to incarcerate you or do whatever they have to do to make it difficult for you to continue to fight them. If there are any callers who are waiting to get in or to ask a question, or if it's Wayne or Jack or Margie, you need to hit a 1 to let Dr. Kate know, our producer, that you are wanting to speak and have a live mic. So if you want to talk, make sure you hit a 1. Red, we got about 8 minutes left.
Gotten on to some areas here that not too many people are willing to tackle. I think it's a good thing. I think the timing is right to go into the spiritual aspect of this more in depth rather than party politics and all that kind of stuff. Party politics, that's just small g God stuff. And so it can consume you if you go that route. I've got somebody trying to get through to me, and so I think I will drop off here, Terry, because I've had I don't know how many interruptions here, people trying to get through, and so I know a couple of them are people that want to that have questions and not having to do with the show. They're not listening to the show, and of course I hate to drop off right now, but I think I better. Because
it may also be Dwayne trying to call you.
Yeah, that could be. But I'll get off here because I've said my piece, I think, for tonight, and we'll have some good discussions coming up.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Red.
Yeah, you bet.
Appreciate you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Bye.
Well, Dr. Kate, if you're not getting anyone calling in there, I can certainly get on a soapbox for a time myself. I really don't like doing that. I really try to bring out others' concepts on the show. And like I said to you the other day, Kate, when I go on your show, I have more opportunity to talk there than I do on this one.
That's very funny. I was just going to tell you to just go ahead if you wanted to, but... But I will say what we heard tonight from our brief discussion with these folks, everyone, Red included, is applied. I've been texting you on applied Constitution 101, so to speak. And these are the tools you use, like finding the original documents, you know, your own property, that kind of thing, the original notes. And the Seventh Amendment, and those are tools that are not being used by the general population out there, and that's what Jack and Margie are saying. You know, they're discouraged. But as Red pointed out, this is like what we started talking about last night. Our enemy is Satan. This is really the New World Order. This is the temptation, and a lot of people are not going to turn their view, and this is the grand deception that's going on, that we can ignore God and ignore this and just continue on our ways and being this political activist or that or our own ways. So I think it's pretty profound carrying on of our discussion like last night. And what a great discussion tonight about how to just live your constitution.
Let me throw out a concept that's right in line with what you're saying, and it's perhaps another launch that we can make on your Wednesday night discernment show as well. If you think about natural law, God's law, or unalienable rights, those were categorized in our founding documents as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And, of course, I believe quite a few people understand now that the pursuit of happiness is really about property, being able to enjoy the fruits of your production. That's really what happiness is. It was originally they used the term property and changed it to happiness, but that's what it pertains to. And if you think about our enemy and all the ways that they're attacking us, including the Agenda 21 and how they've taken over our food and pharmaceuticals and things, the life and liberty part of this is fairly easy to see, but the pursuit of happiness side seems to be a greater delusion of the people. They don't get it. They don't understand how we were being attacked. So often people ask me about, why are they spraying this stuff in our skies? Why are these chemtrails? Why are they doing this? Why are they putting aluminum oxide and barium oxide up there? Well, it's really an attack on both life and pursuit of happiness, because not only is it killing people and giving them Alzheimer's, et cetera, but it's and cutting down our ability to produce agriculturally. It's also a theft of our production. They're stealing water rights and mineral rights and people's ownership rights of their land and the land of the states. I mean, the tens of millions of acres of state land that they've stolen and continue to, and by creating droughts and floods and making it difficult for the middle-sized and small farmer to be economically successful with their production, they're stealing the land at cheap prices. I mean, you were aware of the situation with the Upper Missouri when they created part of that flooding situation, and then the Corps of Engineers went in there and tried to buy the land from the bottomland farmers cheap while it was flooded. You recall that? Well, that's what Agenda 21 is all about. They come on as though there's some kind of environmental protection going on, and the truth of the matter is that all it is control and theft and them having an excuse to do it. It's just another crisis that they've created that they're taking advantage of. Any final comment on that, Kate?
Just that it's all about discernment. If we really look at who the enemy is, we're looking straight Satan in the face. And this was the temptation. This was a temptation of Christ in the wilderness, that he would give all of the power and glory to those who would follow him. And that's what's going on, is people are following who is really an enemy, not like the devil on your, the devil made me do it on your shoulder, as we talked about. We have about a minute and a half left, so I'm just going to see you.
Well, I think I'll close with a prayer, because it seems like we might have needed one tonight. Of course, Dwayne opened this up, but sometimes when you get too close, they'll figure out a way to make it difficult for you to communicate. And I'm going to close this in prayer, Kate, and then you can close this with a tune. Heavenly Father, we come to you, and we pray for discernment. We pray that our eyes be open to the deceptions around us and that you would show us the truth. We're thankful for those like Dwayne and Red and Kate and Jack and Margie and others that come on here and try to share their heart and what they've learned to help and aid others to show us the right path. And we pray, Father, that we always put people on the right path in this show, and that we not do and say things that would mislead them or lead them to trouble. We don't want to cause people to stumble here, and we We're thankful that your spirit joins us and goes before us and keeps us on the right track. And we just want to catch your wave. We want to see what you're doing and be a part of that. It's in your name, Yeshua, Jesus the Christ, that we pray. Amen.
Dirty lips.